89.3 FM. This is member supported WPFW, Washington.
Good evening, Washington, D.C., and America, and welcome to the Raucous Caucus. Join the fray as we broadcast live from the golden studios of WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. Join Terry, Mark, and Garland as they boldly go where no commentators have gone before to inform, even save the nation with wit, wisdom, and sagacity on the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening and welcome to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levie, sitting here with
Garland Nixon.
And he's gone.
I'm sorry, there's no sagacity tonight.
He's gone. He deserted us. It's time to celebrate, that, Garland.
Right.
It's just you and me.
Yeah, we've got a sagacity-less night.
And you know what? That's just fine by me. Because sometimes Terry can give us a little too much sagacity.
That's it, man. He's out in Silver Spring, I think, isn't he, with Greg Palast?
I think he is. Apparently, he's too good for us.
Yeah, that's it,
all
yeah.
I got to say. But Garland here are tonight sharing our sagacity, our wisdom with you folks. And Garland, I want to talk about what's going on in Washington, because President Obama is back, baby.
All right.
He's back. I think he's going to win this battle. The Republicans have said for, I don't know, since Ronald Reagan, I guess 30 years now, that they are the party of no taxation. They are the party that's going to stop taxes. They disagree on everything, right? Some of them want to make sure that every kindergartner is armed.
Yeah,
some of them want to police women's wombs.
And hungry. We want them armed and hungry.
Armed and hungry, right. Some want to police women's wombs. Some of them want to cut back and make sure the poor suffer more. Some of them are they got Wall Street on the brain, and they want to do whatever they can to help millionaires, billionaires, big business. But the one thing that used to bring all Republicans together was the idea that they wouldn't raise your taxes. They even all signed a pledge with Mr. Grover Norquist, who people call the most powerful man in Washington, he's president of Americans for Tax Reform. He's the guy that said that he wants to cut the government until it's so small he can drown it in a bathtub.
You're right.
Right. So they've all signed a pledge, and the pledge says to Grover Norquist that they're not going to raise your taxes. Specifically, they're not going to raise marginal income tax rates. And so here comes President Obama, and he says, all right, Republicans, you've all signed the pledge. Here's what we're going to do. We are going to lower payroll taxes. We're going to specifically lower it. Obama already lowered it from 6% to 4%. We're still in the middle of the great Bush recession. We're going to lower it one more percentage point to 3%. And that's going to give about $500 to the average American family. It'll give about $1,000 if you make $100,000 a year. And if we do nothing, those tax rates are going to go up. So Republicans, listen up. It's very simple. You can be with me and cut taxes, or you can be against me and raise taxes.
Well, that's easy, because don't forget, Grover Norquist notwithstanding, they have one rule in Washington that supersedes all other rules.
Don't raise taxes.
No. Never agree with Barack Obama.
Well, that's what happened. So Barack Obama gave the Republicans everything they wanted. I mean, first thing, the health care mandate, Republican idea, he gave it to them. They deserted it. They called it Obamacare. Cap and trade on energy, the idea that we cap pollution and trade pollution credits.
That was the Republicans came
Republican
up with that
idea. As soon as Barack Obama likes it, they call it cap and tax. They hate it.
All right.
But when it comes to tax cuts, I mean, this should be the Republican holy grail. This is the thing that Republicans say, hey, you may hate us on everything else, but we want to cut your taxes. So Obama says, well, here's what I want to do. I want to cut taxes on everybody that makes $110,000 or less.
Mm-hmm.
That's people who pay the payroll tax.
Yep.
Actually, I'm even cutting taxes on the millionaires as long as they pay the payroll tax up to $110,000. And the Republicans said,
they're against it.
No.
It's absolutely, and I can understand why they'd be against it. Of course,
Because
Obama
proposed it.
We're talking about people who would introduce bills, who would co-sponsor bills, and then after Barack Obama supported the bill, they all voted against it.
Right, like the one on the debt commission, for example.
Yeah.
That was their idea.
Yeah.
He proposed it, then they're all against
it. You're right. So, the thing that, this can be confusing if you try to think of it logically. If you try to reason it out, well, that doesn't make sense. I mean, if you think about it logically and reasonably, but as Voltaire said, you can't reason a person out of a position that they didn't reason themselves into. This is not about reason. This is about hating Barack Obama. Let me change that.
It's about
hating. Yeah,
it's about
politicians saying, look, we know our base wants this. And so we're going to oppose any and everything Barack Obama does, or the Democrats, etc., anything they do, so we can, that's the way we feed red meat. You know, if Barack Obama said, look, you know, I've come around, and here's what I think. Every American should be issued a semi-automatic handgun and required to carry it in a concealed fashion 24 hours a day, the Republicans would oppose it. They'd say, hey, that's a communist, you know, socialist idea. No. Why? We're going to give everybody guns? Ah, that's socialist. We're against it.
The amazing thing, you know, Rush Limbaugh said early in this whole Obama was president.
King,
I think,
Limbaugh.
2 weeks. Man, you know, I think even before he was president. Yeah. I think he'd just been elected. He hadn't even taken office yet.
Who, Rush Limbaugh?
No.
He had been elected, you know, president of the Republican Party.
Obama.
Yeah.
And so Rush Limbaugh said, I want him to fail.
Yeah.
And of course, when a president fails, the entire country fails. So Rush Limbaugh wants America to fail and wants all of us to suffer if it means he can get rid of Barack Obama.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not just Rush Limbaugh. All you have to do is look at the leader of the Republicans, the head of the Republicans in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, was told, what is your first priority? Is it jobs?
Jobs? Yeah, the jobs. Is That'd be good.
Is it education?
Yeah, that's handicapped children.
Is it the deficit?
Yeah.
Is it
helping the poor?
Stopping abortions, which Republicans love. They love to stop abortion. They hate to care for children,
right.
But they love to force the women to have the kids that they can then mistreat later.
Or send off the war.
But no, Mitch McConnell's first priority was to defeat Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And in fact, he said that's his number one priority.
Right.
And then the rest is, whether or not Americans get a better life is way down on his list.
Well, in fact, if you think about it, if that supersedes all others, if you say, well, let me see, if the economy's doing real well, then Barack Obama might, whoa, wait a minute, things are starting to make sense, aren't they?
Political scientists will tell you that the easiest way to determine whether or not a president wins re-election is to simply look at the economy.
Right.
If the unemployment is high but going down, as it was under Ronald Reagan in 1984, he won in the
landslide. Just went down. It just dropped to 8.6.
But if it's going up, the guy loses. And it has gone down to 8.6. And one of the best ways to stimulate an economy, economists tell us, is the payroll tax cut. There's actually two big ways. The other one is unemployment insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why they stimulate the economy, both payroll tax cuts and unemployment insurance, is they go to middle-class people.
That's it.
They go to lower middle-class people.
Yep.
They go to the people working class. They go to the people who say, hey, if I don't have enough money, I can't buy my kid that Xbox.
Yep.
I'm going to have to buy them some cheaper toy because I just don't have the money to afford the more expensive toy.
The person that says, my car is wearing out. My truck that I use for my business, job, whatever, plumbing is wearing out. I need to buy a new one. Oh, I got a few more dollars. Now I can afford the payment to buy a new one.
If not, I'll just patch the tires and hope that I survive.
Yep.
You know, it's the same. But if you've got millions of dollars, you've got 27 cars.
Yeah.
Your kids have not only all the toys they want for Christmas, but their nanny's kids also
and
have
they've
the
got
toys,
all the toys
all
the
they want for
and
Christmas.
And they've got all the toys that the poor kids want for Christmas, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, they've actually got them. The poor kids don't.
So you give a millionaire a bunch of money, and he puts it in his checkbook. And
Cayman Islands.
His accountant makes a notation, and that's about it. And economists call that the marginal propensity to consume.
Mm-hmm.
That's your Economics 101 today, members of the Raucous Caucus.
No, man.
The marginal propensity to consume. And the marginal propensity to consume of a millionaire's dollar is very small.
Mm-hmm.
You give a millionaire an extra dollar, he might spend a penny. He might not.
Why should he?
Any of it at all. Right? But you give give $10,000 to a multimillionaire, again, he hardly notices it. You give $10,000 to someone in the middle class. And that is the difference between a rent payment. That is the difference between getting good food at the grocery or getting cheap food.
Or if they're doing fairly okay and they say, you know, I've been meaning to redo my bathroom.
There you go.
Now there's a plumber. Now there is some other person who does home improvement or something that has money. You know, they get that extra money. They can do things like get a driveway put in their yard. Whatever the case, that money is probably going to go out to people who are going to, guess what? When that plumber, when the guy comes in and redoes the bathroom, now that guy has money to go home and give to the wife and kids et cetera.
That's right. And when the person decides that they can buy more toys, not just one toy for the kid at Christmas, but maybe three toys because they got a little extra cash, guess what that means? That means that Toys R Us has got to hire more people to deal with the demand. That means that Hasbro has got to make more.
Import more from China. unfortunately.
Some places that have American workers, but it means more jobs. It's that simple. And economists say that the reduction in the payroll tax allowing unemployment insurance to continue can add up to 1% of the gross domestic product. Now, to give you an idea of how important that is, 2%, which is what we're on now, they call that anemic growth. It's kind of weak growth. Where we're plugging along, we're growing, right. We're not shrinking, we're not in a recession,
right.
But we're just sort of plugging along, just sort of staying, you know, filling all the jobs we have, not really creating new jobs and so forth. But 3%, that's brisk growth. That's pretty
so
good.
So another percent.
That makes a difference.
We're doing pretty good. Well, you
that
can't have that.
So here's the question. And it's a question, I'm going to open up the phones and we'll let listeners help explain this to me, because I'd like to know what they think about it. At 202-588-0893. My question is, do Republicans want the economy to fail because they want Obama to fail? Or is it more about protecting millionaires? Because the current Democratic proposal is to finance this. First of all, the Democrats say, we don't have to finance this thing. We don't have to finance this thing at all, right? Because the Bush tax cuts weren't financed, and those are $6 trillion, and the cost of this is about $100 billion. So 1/60th the cost of the Bush tax cuts. Bush didn't finance his tax cuts. Bush did two wars, Afghanistan and Iraq. The Iraq war, whatever you think about the Afghanistan war, no one disputes the Iraq war was clearly voluntary. It was like, hey, let's go to war just for fun. That cost $1 trillion. That's 10 times this. They didn't fund that. Dick Cheney very famously said deficits don't matter. So the obvious choice is just don't fund it at all, right? I'll put it on the check. It's far less than President Bush put on the national bill. And when our economy's good, we'll pay it all back. That's one choice. The other choice is simply to take the people who earn more than $1 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
More than $1 million a year. Now, most of these people, the average of them earn about $3 million a year.
Right.
Earn more than $1 million a year and increase their taxes less than 2%. It's 1.9%. Mm-hmm. And that pays for it. And these bills get a majority in the Senate, but the Republicans filibuster it so it can't get that magic 60 number that they require for everything. So the question is, are they trying to protect the millionaires? Are they trying to simply defeat the economy so they can defeat Obama? Or are they really showing their true stripes here, and really Republicans aren't tax cutters at all? What they really are is millionaire protectors.
And here's the thing about it, you know, because I tend to think like this. It's gotten to the point where the GOP is what they're protecting is getting small. For instance, even the companies, the businesses they're protecting, they're not even protecting small and medium sized. They're not even looking out for small. They're looking for, what they are really protecting, what the people they are looking out for now are these multinational conglomerates, the oil companies, these huge, the defense contractors, the huge multinational conglomerates. It's gotten to the point where they're the only ones they're looking out for. The rest of the business, even some big, even some medium sized small businesses are getting the shaft. The only people that they're protecting are the biggest of the big. I mean, it's amazing how much their base has shrunk, because they're real. They say their base. Their base of votes are the right wing, south, southern, you know, that's where their base of votes is one thing, evangelicals, etc. But their base of power is on the other end of the stick. That's what's interesting. Their base of votes are working class people. Their base of power are multinational conglomerate corporations. I think that's very interesting.
Let me give out a couple more statistics I think people are going to find interesting. Back when they were... No, these are good statistics.
Oh, yeah, statistics.
This is good stuff. Let's listen to that. This is stuff that you're going to want to cite to your friends.
Yeah, because if you do many more statistics, you'll look over to this in my chair and you'll see like a skeleton with cobwebs.
Now, Garland, you're going to remember these statistics, okay. And I know our listeners will as well. Back when they were talking about raising taxes on those that made $250,000 or more, which is a lot more than people who make $1 million or more, 98% of small businesses make $250,000 or less. So they said, this is to help small businesses.
You're right.
And it was helping less than 2% of small businesses. And that's those that made $250,000 or more.
Mm-hmm.
I looked up those that make $1 million or more. The latest tax studies, this is the IRS from 2009. Some 80 million plus Americans filed tax returns where they paid. Another 60 million paid tax returns they didn't pay. 230,000 Americans filed tax returns where they made $1 million or more. 230,000.
Wow. So out of 300 million?
That's not...
I don't know how many people actually pay taxes.
Say, that's not 1%.
Yeah.
That's not the top half of 1%.
Right.
That's the top quarter of 1% of those that pay taxes, or about 0.1 or 0.2% of those, the total number of Americans in the United States. It is a very small number of people. And all you have to do is raise their taxes less than 2%, and they're so rich that can finance a huge payroll tax cut for all of us. And I guess my question for you is, you know, one interesting statistic, one more poll I saw, is that the majority of millionaires, they did a poll of people who make more than $1 million a year. They have to work really hard to find them. They had to go to, you know, all these exclusive clubs in New York and go out to yachts. And get them to answer the polls. They probably had to pay them each $10,000.
Right.
But they did a poll, and a bare majority, 55% of millionaires, felt they should pay more taxes.
Right.
So it's not even that they're unpatriotic. No. Most millionaires think, hey, yeah, you know, we're paying lower than we've paid ever in our lives. Yeah, we should chip in a little more.
Right.
So Republicans are not just defending a small minority of the American people. They're defending a minority of that minority. The ones, we'll call them the selfish millionaires.
Even that, and what I was getting at is, it's gotten to the point where the millionaires are small potatoes to them. You know, we're talking the Koch brothers.
The billionaires.
We're talking, you know, instead of 0.1% of 1%, we're talking like a dozen guys. You know what I mean? We're talking a tiny group of people. Of international power. Some of them are people, and some of them are defense contractors, and some of them are international conglomerate corporations that do food or whatever it is. But we're talking a small little group, a small, super powerful entity who they are looking out for and ensuring that they get it. And see, here's the thing about it. It's something you said earlier. This is about maintaining power, so they can do the things that they really want to do. Ultimately, when they said we want, you know, we got to beat Obama, what they were saying is the only thing that really matters to us is regaining power. What we are here in Washington to do. Your jobs, we're not concerned with you people being out of work. Hungry, your children, that's of no concern to us whatsoever. Our only concern is to get power and keep power. Now, don't get me wrong. In politics, that's not unusual. You know, people
no,
want,
but
to take it to the extent that this party has taken to, I think, is, I mean, it's, you're getting way past the line of normal, unethical politics.
Well, here's the thing. I think most people enter politics because they have an idea. They want to change something. They want something to be better. Maybe, I don't know, maybe a minority, maybe even half get in because they just want their name in headlights, and they think, hey, if I become a congressman, I'm important. I mean, maybe they're doing it for their own selves. But I think most people, when they start in politics, they actually have an idea, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's an idea for civil rights or mm-hmm. whether it's an idea for tax cutting, right? I mean, there are people in the Republican Party that get in that say, I think taxes are too high, damn it, I want to get in. What this payroll tax vote shows, and by the way, I think Republicans are going to back down. I want to talk about that a little bit mm-hmm. later on with you, because I think this is one battle Obama's going to win for mm-hmm. once. But when it comes to cutting taxes, the one thing I thought all Republicans could agree on, whether they're, you know, Northeastern liberal Republicans,
right.
there's three of those left, you know, or the Southern evangelical Republicans, or, you know, the Wall Street types, whatever it was, the one thing they could agree on was that taxes were bad and we want to cut them. But now that it comes to a tax, let's face it, the payroll tax cut up to $110,000, that's 4% of your income. All right, that for 90%+ of Americans, that's 4% of their income. Now, if you make $1 million, it's 0.4% of your income, so it's less than 0.5%. So it really it's pocket change if you make $1 million. If you make $1 billion, you don't even notice it. I mean, that's like $4. So this is something that affects every American, but it affects 90% of us in a big way and 10% of us in a very small way. Okay. Nonetheless, if what you care about is taxes, and Republicans, you talk to your average Republican, not the ones in office who are being cagey and all, but yeah, we all have friends or family or colleagues at work who are Republicans.
Gasp.
We do, let's face it, every listener out there,
I know, I have friends who are Republicans.
You know that crazy uncle, right?
Yeah, that's right.
you know that guy at work, you know that woman at the grocery store who doesn't seem like she can afford much but supports the Republican
that's
Party.
It.
And when you ask them why they do it, they'll say, well, Republicans want to keep my taxes low. And now I think they're learning. The working class Republicans, the Tea Party Republicans, not the Forbes, but the people who are marching in the streets, the middle class, are learning that Republicans really don't care about taxes. They only care about two things, millionaires and power.
Well, and here's the other thing, too. When you talk about taxes, I'm a firm believer that it has nothing to do with taxes. I'm a firm believer that the whole issue of taxes, Republicans and taxes, you know, people, when it comes to politics, people don't talk about symbolism enough. Taxes are symbolic. And let me tell you what they're symbolic of. Radical individualism. Mine, my tax money,
my tax.
This is what they'll say. Why should my tax dollars go to this? As if after you pay taxes and they go, when you say my tax dollars, what you're really doing is this. Because the individualist vote is versus the, say, let's just use the term communitarian.
Okay.
The person who says we're a community. Okay. They say when we throw all this money into this pool, we can use it to help the widows and orphans. God forbid we should do things like that. Okay.
With the radical, only because the Bible says so.
Yeah, pay attention to that. Right. Every major religion in the history of mankind has pretty much said you got to help the poor, but that's beside the point. The radical individualists will not even accept the premise that their money has gone into a community pot and is therefore the a property of all in the community to be shared equal. They won't even accept that premise, so they say my tax dollars, as if after they've paid the tax dollars, they still have, they're still theirs, and they still have the ability to say, as though, you know, let's say 300 million people are paying taxes, we got $300 million, and every one of them says, okay, I want my dollar to go here, and I want, it's that radical individual, individualistic culture and mindset that says me, mine, mine. And so taxes are perfect, because when you say, I'll lower your taxes, you're saying, you have to contribute less to the community pot to help all. And it's symbolic. I don't want to give them, why should I give them anything? Why should I give somebody else something? It's mine, mine. Now, of course, when I get old and I need medical, don't touch my Medicare.
That's right. Don't touch my Social Security. If I'm a farmer, don't touch my agricultural subsidies.
No.
If I'm an oil company, don't touch my tax break.
Yes.
Right? If I'm a pharmaceutical company, don't touch my tax break. If I'm a defense contractor, I need that money to defend America. I know we already have a plane that does exactly the same thing, but we need three planes that do exactly the same thing. We need three separate designs just in case one of them
doesn't make us enough profit. Let's be square about it.
Enough profit. So what's fascinating to me is how much of a society we've come. You know, it's only 50 years. Really, it's only 50 years since John F. Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. And that was considered at the time a wonderful statement, right? That's the thing that people remembered. That's like four score and seven years ago, in Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, this was Kennedy's most famous statement. People thought, wow, what a powerful message. We're all in this together. We're all in one country together.
Communitarian, doesn't it? All one together. It's kind of anti-radical individualistic thinking, isn't it?
If President Obama or any American president were to say in 2011, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Socialist.
You'd be booed off stage.
Yeah.
Be booed off stage. E pluribus unum, from many one,
yeah.
Our motto. Are you kidding me? No. From you to me.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
We are the selfish nation.
Or me, mine.
Mine, mine,
forget
mine.
You.
Go away.
Yeah. So what we've, and it's the battle that we've had. You know, it's funny. This is a battle. You know, people look at these types of things as though they're brand new. You know, as though they're new. This is not new. This is the eternal battle in the United States. Even so much as the during the Civil War, the people in the North called it the Civil War. The people in the South called it
the war between the states.
That individualistic, smaller confederacies. There's a bunch of states together rather than one union. That culture and that mentality says separation, individual, which is odd because you cannot live independently in an interdependent world. It's contrary. You know, wolves all work together so they can eat. You know what I mean? A bunch of deer will all sit there and one or two of them will be looking around making sure everything's okay. Animals work together. But these radical individualists seem to have this idea that says, I should keep all of mine and then, yeah, the heck with everybody else, they're on their own.
And here's what's so interesting. The Democratic Party was always the party of the middle class, of the lower middle class. You can go back to the time of Jefferson and Jackson,
yep.
Right? They were slave owners, but they were looking out for the white men without property, right?
Yeah.
That's where they were starting. And then, you know, all after the Civil War, the poor farmers, they were the ones who supported the Democratic Party. And then what happened? You found that back in the late 1890s, the progressive movement, the idea that the poor white person needed some money, needed some hope, that was William Jennings Bryan.
The unions were happening. happening?
He was. Well, that's in the Northeast. Right now, yeah, I'm talking about what was going on in like the agrarian and the agricultural areas in the South and in the West and the poor farmers, and they were the ones saying, you know, we need more paper money.
Yeah.
We need more loans.
Yeah.
We need more. You know, William Jennings Bryan said, "Don't crucify me on a cross of gold. Get rid of the gold standard." So the progressives were always from the South. They were in places like Alabama and Mississippi and Nebraska, and then came the Civil Rights Movement. And suddenly all these poor whites who supported Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty and wanted to get rid of poverty and wanted to make sure that there was rural electrification, all that kind of stuff, as soon as they found out that black folk were going to get some of these benefits, suddenly the South did a turn. And suddenly you found they no longer supported the Democratic Party. They supported the Republican Party, the party of the rich, the party that's always been the party of the rich, going way back. And what's fascinating to me, it's to this day you still see the same thing. You see people who say, I want my tax cut. Well, here is the classic case. Barack Obama's going to give you a tax cut. The Republicans are going to raise your taxes. Unless you're a millionaire, and remember, 99.75% of us don't earn $1 million a year. Unless you're a millionaire, unless you make more than a millionaire, unless you make $1 million a year, which is substantially more, Barack Obama wants to lower your taxes and Republicans want to raise your taxes. Now, that is as clear as possibly could be. And my question for, and I'd love to hear a Republican call in at 202-588-0893. How is it that a Republican can justify, assuming he's not a millionaire, because there are those, assuming you're not making $1 million a year, how can a Republican justify the idea that you want your own tax? I mean, you're selfish, right? You're a Republican, and yet Obama wants to lower your taxes. Republicans want to raise your taxes, and you're going to vote for the Republicans?
Yeah, and what they're doing now is this. The proof is in the pudding. They are now proving that it was never about taxes. You know,
that's
they're
right.
Proving. Okay, fine. So you're in favor of tax cuts, right? I want tax cuts. He doesn't. If you're in favor of tax cuts, then you're going to pick the guy who wants tax cuts. Well, if that guy wants tax cuts, now I'm against him. So the truth be told, it was never about tax cuts in the very first place. They were symbolic. And here's what I think. I feel that what we're looking at is a party who say, a group of people who say tax cuts are symbolic of my radical individualistic culture. Now, if that guy does it, that guy, he represents a communitarian culture. I don't want him to have any victories, because if he has any victories, if anything good comes from what he does, then people will look at that communitarian culture at those darn blue states and say, well, you know, maybe what they're saying isn't also all that bad. I have to oppose that person at all cost, because in the long run, they are a threat to my radical individualism.
Here's what I find interesting. It's not just about Republicans. You take a guy like Grover Norquist. All right, this is a guy who has made his entire career out of opposing taxes.
Right.
He's Mr. No Tax. Mm-hmm. That's what he is. That's all he does. That's how he makes his living. No taxes, no taxes, no taxes, no taxes. This is the guy who you'd think, all right, well, this guy, Mr. No Tax guy, he is going to support the Obama tax cut and be opposed to the Republican tax increase, right? I mean, here, above all, right? I mean, you know, the abortion people, they're going to support a candidate who's pro-life or pro-choice, no matter whether it's Republican or a Democrat, right? Because you're pro-life, you want pro-life candidates, pro-choice, pro-choice. So Mr. No Tax is going to support this. But Grover Norquist just came out and he said, actually, when it comes to this tax increase, I'm fine with it. And he's like, I don't care whether they increase taxes or not. And they said, Grover Norquist, are you sane? Are you in there?
Imposter! You're not Grover Norquist. Who are you?
You don't care if they raise taxes or not? Listen to his argument, because it's so preposterously stupid that he knows it's stupid.
Yeah.
He said, well, the payroll tax cuts, the Obama tax cuts that have been in place for a year, those were temporary. So it's perfectly fine if we increase them. Because they
unlike
were temporary.
The Bush cut, actually, unlike the Bush tax cuts,
which
were
are
temporary.
Temporary.
Right.
Exactly.
So, you know, I'd like to put it another way. I know we got to go in a second, and that is, I think the president in this instance has flushed them out.
I think so.
He's flushed them out. He has smoked them out
and
of their filthy little rat hole.
He's going to win this victory. 202-588-0893. Come join us on the Raucous Caucus. We'll be right back after this.
Please join Bread for the Soul, WPFW, and DC Public Library in our annual toy and book drive for children with HIV/AIDS or whose parents have HIV/AIDS. Beginning now, please drop off new, unwrapped toys and child-appropriate books to any branch of the DC Public Library by December 14th. Volunteers are also needed as drivers and delivery persons to deliver food baskets and toys on December 17th. To volunteer, please call 202-421-8608 or 202-488-3404. Help make a child's Christmas bright. Thank you.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine sitting here with...
I am not Terry DeCaster.
No, he's gone.
I'm Garland.
He's flown the coop. This is 89.3 FM, WPFW. You are listening to the Raucous Caucus. Garland and I are having a very pleasant conversation without Terry today. He'll be here next week. If you're a Terry fan, he'll be here next week. And we're talking about the... President Obama, the Democratic plan to smoke out the Republicans. They claim to be tax cutters, but what they really are is millionaire protectors who want to destroy Barack Obama.
And here's the thing about it, man, and this is what I enjoy that's going on right now. I am so enjoying it. The Republican Party is kind of is being flushed out as being that party, although, you know, we don't hear about it on the news, their party is being torn to shreds right now.
That's right.
And it's being torn to shreds along socioeconomic lines.
And why the heck didn't we do this 2 years ago? I mean, this is perfect. This is exactly what President Obama should have been hitting on the head all along. I've been critical of him for compromising too much. This is the perfect issue to go into the elections. I don't know whether it's election time that's made him see the right thing or whether he's just finally figured out the Republicans aren't going to negotiate.
But it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter his reasons. He is coming back, and I predict, Garland, I may be wrong, but if I'm wrong, I'll eat crow in a month. I predict that before Christmas, Republicans are going to cave and they're going to reduce the payroll tax cut. That's my prediction. You agree with my prediction?
Yeah, and you're not saying.
Do you agree with me?
But do you think President Gingrich? No, never mind.
I want to get you a commitment too. I want Republicans to cave before Christmas.
I think that right now they're in a situation where the quicker we can cave and get this out of the way, the better.
I think they're going to cave.
Want this to play out in the long run. Ken!
Let's hear from Ken. Ken, are they going to cave on this one?
Yes, they will cave. They're going to cave because the American public has woken up and stopped drinking the Kool-Aid. The American public, via the Occupy movements, have come to realize that it's basically the game in town is that corporations pay lobbyists to go to Congress to lobby on their behalf. The American citizen doesn't have anybody to lobby on their behalf. You elect officials, but once you get them elected to office, what takes place? The corporations persuade them to vote for what they want.
And you know, Ken, I'll tell you who the Republicans have leading their pack right now, the king lobbyist of all, Newt Gingrich, a guy that's been paid tens of millions of dollars to help his corporate friends get special access to politicians in Washington. That's the face of the Republican Party. Either that or Mitt Romney, Mr. Venture Capitalist, move all the jobs to China, India, and Mexico, Romney. So you either got the guy that kills American jobs, you got Mitt Fire American Romney,
right,
or you've got Newt Washington insider lobbyist Gingrich, and that's the face of the Republican Party.
Oh, it ain't a pretty face.
But what needs to take place is that the general public needs to have its own lobbyist to go and lobby on its behalf. Your politicians really don't lobby on your behalf. You don't have anybody who's going to, regardless of party, going to each of these offices saying, this is what our agenda is for the American public.
Well,
you don't have that.
And there's something I would say, and that is, and I'm going to say this clearly, within the Occupy movement, there's people that I disagree with and don't agree with. But I think this, that is something that has come of the Occupy movement.
They have brought the conversation to the front.
It is a form of lobbying. People realize they can't, you can't go to their door. You have no money. You can't go, they're not going to listen to you. So it is a form of public lobbying, of publicly doing, taking an alternate route to influence politicians.
Ken, thanks for your call. I really appreciate
it. Great call.
One thing, folks, you know, it's true that the lobbyists can afford all kinds of expensive lobbyists and so forth.
Yeah.
But never doubt that your phone call, and I used to work in congressional office, it's true that you're just one phone call, but you get you and 10 and 20 and 50
yep.
of your friends, and you start bombarding them with phone calls, bombarding them with emails, and even if you don't pay them, you can't have a voice. And so
yep.
don't ever forget that. Let's go to David. David, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm glad you guys are on today.
Thank you.
You wanted to talk to a registered Republican
I do.
About this tax policy.
Yes. What do you think? Do you support the Obama tax cut or the Republican tax increase?
Well, I think it's a mistake on Obama's part to propose this as a tax cut. I mean, really, it's a time bomb because this thing is going to hit us down the road when Social Security is not able to pay out. So I think, number one, it's bad tax
hang on there, David, because you may not be fully aware of President Obama's plan, and if you don't believe me, just go to whitehouse.gov. President Obama has laid out that no money will be – this is very important. I'm glad you mentioned this, David.
Yeah.
No money will be taken from the Social Security Trust Fund. All of the money that's going for the payroll tax cut will be replenished from the general fund. This is actually what Bill Clinton did back when we had the massive surplus. He took half the surplus, he devoted it to Social Security. So this will not touch Social Security at all. It will either leave a deficit of about $100 billion, or about 1/60th of the Bush tax cuts, or what it'll do is they're going to tax the millionaires 1.9%, and that'll pay for it. But either way, either plan, it won't affect Social Security. So David, given that, does that change your view?
Not really, because either way, it's bad tax policy to take away money that right now is going to Social Security.
But it doesn't affect Social Security.
And saying, I'm going to reduce that amount that's going to Social Security.
Because no, but it doesn't reduce the amount going to Social Security.
I don't have to pay as much for Social Security.
No.
What I would rather see is for you, because I earn over $107,000, right?
Okay.
So they stopped taking that Social Security out of my check.
Right.
That's nuts.
Oh, I agree.
Well, how is that fair?
Hey, we can agree, David. If you're saying increase the payroll tax so that everybody pays the same percentage, I completely agree with you there.
That's making it fair for everybody.
I agree with you.
Why do we phrase it as an increase? Because it's not.
I completely agree with you there. And that's something that I certainly think the Democrats should stand behind. Absolutely. I completely agree with you there. But one thing I want to make clear, because and you can go to whitehouse.gov. You don't have to take my word for it. It does not reduce benefits available or even a single dime from the Social Security Trust Fund. It all gets paid over from the general fund. So let me ask you, David, when we had the massive Bush tax cuts, do you think those should have been paid for, or were you fine to run down a national credit card?
Well, that was another horrible public
policy.
Okay,
so were you against the Bush tax cuts?
Absolutely.
And let me ask you something else.
Except I think it does make sense to leave them alone for the middle-class people. Let's define the middle class. Let's be really clear.
You're sounding more and more like a Democrat every day, David.
It's under $500,000 a year.
So, David, the two things you support when you talk about leave them alone for the middle class and raise them on the rich, it sounds to me like, and we're glad to have Republicans join us, you basically support the Democratic plan and you're against the Republican
plan.
Well,
let me say this about our caller. I'm glad to hear this. He's what, way back in the day, there used to be something called a moderate Republican.
That's right.
A Republican who actually looked at the facts and said, I'm weighing what I think is best, which I believe, whether I agree with our caller here or not on everything, I believe this man's honestly weighing the facts, determining what he likes based on the facts. Now, unfortunately, in your party, all too often, a person like you who says, you know, there are some things I'm going to disagree with totally with Garland and Marco, and some things that we may, you know, be close to the same, you get tossed out with the bathwater.
David, has your party deserted you?
Don't forget, who backed down last year when those tax cuts for the rich were up for
Obama backed down,
right.
And Garland and I criticized him for it. No, you're right.
Chicken shit.
you might have to buzz that word.
Okay.
But listen, I agree with you. Garland and I agree with you. We criticized President Obama when he backed down on that. And what I'm so glad is that he's someone that he's actually standing up for it right now. And so thank you for your call, David. I'm always glad to hear from Republicans.
And we actually wanted to give him a little extra time because, you know, we don't get a lot of Republicans.
That's true. We're happy to have all kinds call in.
We got to treat the few Republicans we have. We got to give them a little bit extra because maybe we can encourage another one every now and then to call us.
That's true. 202-588-0893. I hope I pronounced his name right. Kalonji? Did I get your name right?
That's close enough.
Close enough.
All right.
How do I pronounce your name?
Kalonji.
Kalonji.
Okay.
Welcome to the show, Kalonji.
Thank you. I'd like to suggest something. Since more than half of Congress are in the 1%, meaning they're millionaires, that they're not really concerned so much with protecting the big companies, because although they've got to protect their income, because most of them have their investments in stocks, you know, whether it being big companies or Wall Street, whatever, because they don't have time to work. They don't entertain the people who vote for them. They entertain people who are on their level, who have money. So I'm suggesting that they're about protecting themselves. They're too selfish to think about the public or anyone else. It's a very selfish kind of involvement. They've been spoiled.
I'll tell you this, Kalonji. I think you're right about some of them. I will tell you there are definitely rich members of Congress who do look out for the poor. John Kerry's a very, very rich man.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
And I like Ted Kennedy.
Ted Kennedy's a very rich man. Roosevelt was very rich.
Yeah.
And conversely, there are poor people or people who used to be poor. Sarah Palin comes to mind. She used to be poor. She's not poor anymore. Newt Gingrich used to be poor before he sold his soul to all the lobbyists.
Yeah.
But who become rich by supporting all these corporate interests. But you're absolutely right. The average member of Congress is far wealthier than the average American citizen, and they're not looking out for the average American citizen.
Well, and
most of them are.
They're looking out for their donors. And here's the thing. Their money a lot of times isn't even coming from the rich. It's coming from the super, you know what I mean? Again, here's the thing about it. It's coming from lobbyists. It's coming from the energy lobby. It's coming from the tobacco lobby. It's coming from a conglomeration of multinational corporations. So, I think that the elements that are pushing this are conglomerations of super powerful entities, mainly corporate entities, who flood money into Washington through via lobbyists and contributions, and they are the ones who really push policy, and you end up everybody's getting shit. You know, it's not, to me, we often say the wealthy, but it's not about the wealth. I'll put it like this. If I was a millionaire and my taxes were $1 a year, and what am I supposed to do? Say, well, you know, I think I'll send them an extra $10. No, that's what's required. That's what you're going to pay. So it's not really about the wealthy. It's about
a certain policy. Form of selfishness.
It's about an era of selfishness.
Right.
The people, the Occupy folks, are only starting to move because they're hurting now.
I think that's right.
I'm not making a statement about everybody when I say this, but the majority of those folks had no even understanding about what this country was doing around the world until this country started doing it to them. And they start hurting.
I'll tell you, it's also about crony capitalism. I think that most Americans are not socialists. Most Americans understand a little bit of capitalism that, you know, if you work hard to make a good product, you should make a little bit more money. But crony capitalism, where you have the government feeding welfare to pharmaceutical companies and oil companies and health insurance companies and not letting
Kellogg, Brown and Root and, you know,
Halliburton, for
yeah,
that
Halliburton.
Matter. That I think that people are starting to wake up to that. Thank you for your call. That was a great call.
I think they're being, here's the thing, they're not just waking up. It's like they're laying in the bed and somebody's throwing a bucket of ice water on them. You know what I mean? Because the people in America were asleep as long as things, you know, weren't going too bad. Somebody's throwing a bucket of ice water on them, you know, metaphorically speaking, in the form of layoffs and pain, and now they're like screaming at the top of their lungs.
202-588-0893. Let's go to Ahmed. Did I pronounce your name right?
This is a great show. This is the kind of show I want to hear.
Thank
every
you.
Day from 5 to 7 on my way from work home.
You got it.
Really, you guys do a great job, and I think we need to have it 5 days a week.
Well, sounds like you need to be calling, emailing, and sending some letters to WPFW.
Yeah, give me a favor. Yeah,
sending everything else. But
write WPFW, because I can tell you.
And I want you to take the best shot at this.
All right.
Okay.
We need to find how the states and the national countries, nations, can entangle themselves about speculation by Woody, whatever it's called,
Moody's
and SP
Standard and Poor's.
Standard and Poor, yes. There's got to be a way, because these guys are determining, you know, through speculation. It's no longer with the individuals and the governments. It is now they determine the fate of the countries, and now everybody is buckling down for them. I mean, really, very scared of them and have to please them.
Ahmed,
do you have any answer for this?
I do, Ahmed. That's a really good point.
Great point.
Because a lot of people don't realize how we got into the mess that we're in. And it's not just that we had people gambling on Wall Street to the tune of trillions of dollars with these credit derivative swaps and so forth. Frankly, they couldn't have gotten away with it if it weren't for private ratings agencies. Moody's,
yep.
Standard & Poor's, and
yep.
Fitch are the three most common, rating this junk, and it's only because I can't say the word
that
I really want to say on the air, rating this BS, shall we say, as AAA, as the best rating it could be.
Yeah.
And the reason they rated it is not because it was any good. They knew it was bad. You have emails between them saying it's bad. They rated it good because they got paid to rate it was good.
Yep.
And one of the nice things about the Dodd-Frank bill that's gone through Congress, but the Republicans refuse to allow implement, but it is the law, is it regulates these rating agencies to make sure that...
We can get rid of them. We can entangle ourselves. We don't need those rating companies. These rating companies are determining the fate of nations.
Yeah.
Nations. It's no longer about your company. It's no longer about that.
We have
to find a way to tell them, get lost. We don't care about you. We have to find a way to do this.
Sure.
We cannot determine this. They are taking away everything about with the statements they make. This is what put us, this is speculation. It's what put us where we are today, for God's sake.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I hear you, Ahmed.
I
tell you,
they
lowered the United States ratings, and what happened? More people bought treasuries. So no one listens to them anyway. If you're going to have ratings agencies, the answer is it should be done through some, government or nonpartisan group of people.
Yeah.
That's accountable to the voters, accountable to the government. You could hire a bunch of experts like the Council of Economic Advisors,
like the UN or whatever, where they have a budget that's not going to be increased or decreased
based on what
they find.
No one should be paid based on their rating. That's exactly right. And if they do a lousy job, they should all be fired. And that's a minimum of what we need to do. And Ahmed, I appreciate you bringing
that
up. 202-588-0893. Rick, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Thank you. This is Rick, president by amendment.com. I want to see how you doing.
I'm just wonderful, President. Rick.
Yeah.
You're not Rick Perry?
Yeah.
All right, okay. Go ahead. Talk to me.
The GOP is a fiscal suicide cult, but the True Colors moment was a couple months ago when they tried to kill the country by just withholding the debt limit thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. And I mean, Michelle Bachmann very famously said, so what? We don't have to pay our debts.
That's what Grover Norquist is really about. It's really what we're in here is, is Reaganomics going to kill America or vice versa? It's starve the beast, and that includes killing the country, is okay with them.
Here's what I find so fascinating, though. The Republicans claim to care about deficits, and if you watch them very carefully, you'll find that they really, really care about deficits every time a Democrat is president. When Bill Clinton was president, they cared about deficits.
You guys are Democrats.
No, but listen up, because look at the Republicans. I'll talk about the Democrats in a second, but the Republican Party, when Bill Clinton was in office, they cared about deficits. When Ronald Reagan was in office, and when either Bush was in office, they didn't care about deficits.
Yeah.
Cheney said deficits don't matter. Now that Obama's in office, they care about deficits again.
Wrong. Wait a minute. No, let's not forget.
Well, the definition of a fiscal conservative is the party not in power.
Well, that's for the Republicans.
Yeah.
But the Democrats,
yeah.
I got to tell you, they were being fiscally conservative back in Clinton times.
And let's not forget, when the Bush tax cuts were up for renewal, they were no longer against deficits.
That's true.
That's when in Obama's time. So it's like, hey, we got to give, we got to get the Bush tax cuts. Deficits? Oh, well, that we got to, why pay for these things?
So it's really millionaires.
Fine. And then
that's their loyalty.
Next day they said, the day after they were signed, they said, my God, where these deficits are destroying our country. You know, it's like, here, take this knife and stick me in the heart with it.
Well, let me say this. I think the Democrats' position should be, and the ones with the most integrity, it is. The position is in good times you save, and in bad times you spend.
Well,
and that's basic economics. That's the way it should be.
I got to throw this in here, Mark, and that is this. And what's interesting now is what's really going on is this. What's happening in America? There's a huge fight, and it's the I think we don't discuss enough the fight with. In the Republican Party, I heard something very interesting the other day. That was this guy said he was in, some farmland in, farmland America that votes all Republican.
Are you picking on farmland
America?
No,
I'm saying it was farmland
Green
America.
Green Acres is the place to be.
Right. So he said he was asking one of these guys, what is it about Romney that you don't like? Now, The media portrays the Republican base repulsion, for lack of a better word. They repulsed by Romney.
Oh, yeah.
They would portray that as having to do with his moderation. The guy said, farmer after farmer said, I don't like that guy. He's just one of those big corporate guys.
And that's
the reality is that the working class of the Republican Party, along with the working class of the Democratic Party, but they're just gone into, my God, they're, you know, unfortunately, they're kind of misinformed and misled. Regarding their, you know, the way they see a fix, but they are rejecting the corporate raiders of Wall Street. The corporate
because they
raiders,
understand that right. They're the people who take the jobs from America right. And give and bring them to kids in China right. Or Mexico yeah. Or Thailand.
And it was never more apparent there the issue within the Republican Party than during the debt crisis, because they created this monster by going out telling their base, you know, all of these absurdities, fiscal absurdities. They convinced them of these things. Well, when it came time for the debt limit, the traditional Republican Party said, you know, we know these are fiscal absurdities. Let's go do what we have to do. These people really were convinced of that. So now they're in a fix because the party is being dragged around by this Frankenstein that they created, and the monster's coming back to kill them.
But here's the thing that's so surprising, Garland. That's what makes this payroll tax cut so surprising. Okay, so you could say Republicans are one mind. All they care about is tax cuts.
No.
And what we're learning is that's wrong.
Yes.
All they care about is tax cuts to millionaires. That's right. All they care about. And they don't care about the other 99.75%
of us. And I say it's neither, because tax cuts are a ruse. Tax cuts are nothing but it's all symbolism. Tax cuts are symbolic of the radical individualistic culture. And that's all they really care about, is that egocentric, individualistic culture.
Still time to join the conversation. 202-588-0893. Fode, welcome to the show.
Yes, please. How are you doing today?
We're doing
good.
Great.
Talk to us.
Look, you know what? I've lived in this country for a while now, and I just want to talk about intellectual dishonesty in this country.
Okay.
Look, recently, it was still with Michelle Bachmann. You remember, because of the thing that happened in Tehran, where the Iranians attacked the British embassy.
Yeah, but this sounds like it's going to be off topic, Freddie.
When the last presidential debate, and Michelle Bachmann said that the one thing America should do is to close the embassy.
Is to call.
Yeah, she said close the embassy in Iran.
Close
and we don't
embassy.
Have an embassy in Iran.
That's true. So she doesn't even know what we're talking about. Or of course, there's this Herman Cain, when asked about President Obama's policy in Libya, took a full
he's got so many things
2 minutes.
Swirling around
right,
in his
right.
Head.
He can't remember. You wanted to press the right button on his jukebox, D4, right?
Yeah, right.
To answer that question. But that's a little bit off topic, though, so let's go on to Eric. Eric, welcome to the show.
How you doing?
Great,
doing good.
Great.
Talk to us, Eric.
Okay, I'll try to make this quick because I know you're winding down your hour. I don't have a solution, but I do have a suggestion which might help address part of the problem.
Okay.
The problem is Congress cannot and will not govern because they have been bought. The purpose of every congressman, Senate and representative, is to get reelected. The second priority is to get the money to get reelected. The third priority is to kiss all the necessary behinds to get the money to get reelected.
Right. All true.
A writer by the name of Ron Kessler some years ago, in a very beautiful book called Inside Congress, made the great suggestion. It is time to eliminate campaign financing.
Eric, I'll tell you something. There's nothing that Garland, Terry, and I agree with you more on than
okay,
the idea
now,
that we need public financing campaigns. Go ahead.
Here's what the Occupy people need to do, and this is something that you guys need to really start pushing. If you're a congressman, you are allowed a set amount, number one, set amount of money to run your campaign. That comes out of the general treasury. You are
it's called public financing.
No outside campaign finance contributions. You get a set number amount of money that comes from Congress. You account for every nickel, and any nickel you are eliminated from the campaign.
Eric,
you are
100% correct.
Point number two, stay with me.
Yeah, real quick.
I said I'm going to make it quick.
All right.
Point number two, the campaign season is reduced down to only 3 to 4 months.
It works for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This takes you out of the fundraising business and puts you back into the business of governing.
And of course, the problem there being, the fairly obvious problem is this. You are asking people who have created rules that give them a very closed club to change the rules so that other people can not only come in the club, but toss them out. Believe me, that ain't happening.
I expect Congress to do this. This is the job for the American people.
Well, I'll tell you, Eric.
The American people need to assign a committee of all the way across the board, not just attorneys. We need scientists, we need engineers, we need accountants, we need gym teachers, we need policemen to write up a new set of rules for the government of this country.
Well, thank you, Eric. I'll tell you something. You're absolutely right. This public campaign finance is something that Garland, Terry, and I all very strongly support. Frankly, it's what's done in most democracies in the world. It's done in England. It's done in France. It's done in Canada. It's simply the right way to do it, and we just need to start doing it. Now, of course, we've got real problems. We've got a structural problem. We've got Citizens United. Mm-hmm. We've got corporations funding all the money. But as the ultimate solution, there's no question that is the right one. Eric, you're dead on. Last caller, we've got Phil. Phil, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Okay, Raucous Caucus. I'm a business owner.
Okay.
Payroll taxes went up 2 years ago. Okay, so I am now taking more money out of each paycheck, out of my employees' paycheck.
Wait, they were lower last year. They went down from 6% to 4%.
No. They went up. 2010 payroll taxes, what I deduct from the employee went up.
And they went down in 2011 from 6.2% to 4.2%.
No, they went up.
I don't know what you're talking about, Phil.
What I deduct, I have a schedule. So if my employee makes $1,000,
right?
Okay, in 2010, I would take out $140.
Okay.
In 2011, I now take out $160.
I'm not sure why that is, because I'll tell you, Barack Obama's tax cut for 2011 reduced the payroll tax from 6.2% to 4.2%. So I would check your figures. I think you're withholding the wrong amount.
No. What you're talking about is what you are now taking out for Social Security.
Right, the payroll tax. Right.
Okay, I'm talking about the actual deduction for your estimated taxes, okay?
Well, that's different. That's income tax.
Well, listen to what I'm saying, okay? So what we've already had the reduction in Social Security and which to me, whatever, they're kind of digging their own little hole, okay, for that. But we're taking out more money out, okay, in 2011 out of every person's paycheck.
Phil, with due respect, you're just not right there.
I just don't think you're correct.
The way federal income tax works, I know you know this, is you have so many exemptions you put down.
Yep.
How many you get, one, two, or three, and that determines how much you reduce.
Or zero.
But the federal income tax has not changed from 2010 to 2011, and the payroll tax has gone down. So maybe you're paying your employees a lot more money, in which case, terrific. You're a great business owner,
That's
Phil.
It. He's paying more money.
Well, then you're a great guy. But if you are reducing more, if you're taking more money out, there's no reason to do that unless the employee has increased their number there. I don't know what you're talking about, Phil.
No, I don't think we have Phil anymore.
That's okay. Hey, listen, enjoy the show. We will be back next week. We'll be at Ben's,
I'm bringing a guest, Mark.
Tell me about your guest.
I'm bringing a guest. A very interesting guest, a man by the name of Michael Roberts. Michael V. Roberts Sr., if you want to Google it. He was named, I believe, the Black Businessman or Black Entrepreneur of the Year the year before
last. He beat out Herman Cain?
By the Congressional. Yeah, that's what he doesn't do pizzas. By the Congressional Black Caucus. Very, very, like I said, you can Google Michael V. Roberts. Very, from St. Louis, powerful businessman, has a number of companies. He's got radio stations. He's got TV stations.
And he's going to come join us.
He's got 40 hotels. He's got Robert's Isle in the
I wonder what
Bahamas.
He thinks about the millionaire's tax
What's interesting
cut.
About this guy is, well, he's coming to town. He's going to be meeting. What he's working on right now are issues that prohibit small businesses, the average small person who wants to start up a new business. You want to start up a business, the banks won't lend you money. They're getting money from the government at 0%, but they won't lend any. They'll use that money to make a profit, but they won't lend anybody to a small business who wants to start up. He's working on that issue. He's going to talk. He's a good
that's a
loyal,
great topic for
he's
next
a loyal
week.
Democrat, and there he's going to come talk with
no,
us
No, that's
next
a great
week.
Topic for next week, because I'll tell you something. People talk about small businesses creating jobs. The vast majority of small businesses only create jobs when they're really small, when they're just starting up.
Yeah.
When people have an idea, they hire five or six people. Once they're there for a while, they might increase it from six to seven. So we're going to talk about that next week.
We're going to be live at Ben's Next Door. Mike Roberts is going to be there with us.
1211 U Street. You can come. You can meet him, shake his hand, talk to him after the show. I want to thank David Kelly, who's running our boards. And I know we've got Brother Off following us, so we can all calm down with some jazz collective.
You can Facebook me at Garland Nixon.
You can Facebook me too, Mark Levine, M-A-R-K-L-E-V-I-N-E. We have a new Twitter at Raucous DC that we're going to start tweeting more. I have my own Twitter, Mark Levine Talk, if you want to tweet at me.
There we go.
Are you on the tweet yet, Garland?
Yes, at Garland Nixon.
At Garland Nixon. Yeah. See, I couldn't get my name. There aren't too many Mark Levines. Yeah, well. So it's Mark Levine Talk. So tweet at us, Facebook us, and Ahmed, you wanted us on 5 days a week. Just give a call to the people of WPFW.
Because right now we're on every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. here on 89.3 FM WPFW in Washington, D.C.
Don't miss us each and every week.